will come to order. Welcome back. We did say Happy New Year at the special January meeting. I would like to welcome Ms. Molly Richardson as the new DFL researcher and Max Hall, our new page. I would like to welcome Representative McDonald and Representative Lesh as new members on our committee. And new people, staff or visitors sometimes, or new members are asked to present, to give a short introduction of themselves, and to present a picture for us all to enjoy that tells a little bit about you as an individual doing something other than working at the legislature, something that you value highly and it's meaningful for you. And we will use or keep on the agenda for the next meeting a time period for those pictures and introductions to be shown. First item of the agenda today is House File 2365, and I am the author of that bill, and so Representative Newton is in charge.
Okay, Chair Murphy, if you, let's see, you have House File 2365, if you'd like to introduce the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House File 2365 for consideration by the committee.
Thank you.
We have before us this bill, which is a good example of one of the on-session goals of making government work better for our citizens. I'm not really the author of the bill. I'm the facilitator for the bill in the House of Representatives, the first facilitator. Lieutenant Governor Yvonne Pretner-Solon has been working on this bill since about the end of April, and her staff, and she has done all the groundwork with the boards and the stakeholders that this bill is being brought to. And this bill has seven committees to go through, so it was wise, I thought it was wise, to have the bill start in our committee on the first day. The bill, House File 2365, provides a mechanism to better meet the needs of current and recent active duty members of the military and their families who are relocated to Minnesota from another state. It establishes a process for expedited licensing to allow otherwise qualified people to continue to work in their profession as their lives are impacted by military service. We have heard a number of proposals over the months and in the last year about doing things to acknowledge the sacrifices that people in the military and their families make in service to the country and the state, and making Minnesota a more welcoming state for veterans. I think this bill goes a long way in accomplishing both those goals. The bill applies to active duty members of the military and those who have received a recent honorable discharge and the spouses of active duty members. It directs targeted state agencies and licensing boards to establish an expedited licensing process for otherwise qualified applicants, and it directs each licensing entity to establish a process for issuing temporary licenses for qualified individuals until the full application process is completed and permanent licenses are issued. I think it's important to note that the people seeking licensure will not be held to any lower standard for qualifications than any others and will have to provide evidence of past licensure or permitting in other states. Lieutenant Governor Yvonne Solon, Pretner Solon is here to give additional information and background, and Mr. Kerr is here from the Department of Military Affairs.
Good. Welcome, Lieutenant Governor. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Newton and members. And I must say that I think this is the first time I've ever testified in the House. It's been a long time since I've testified in a legislative body, but the first time I've testified in the House, I believe. And it is really a pleasure for me to be here with my friend and colleague from northeastern Minnesota, Representative Murphy, and for the first time that I'm testifying here. So I would like to tell you about this bill, which came about as a result of conversations with the First Lady, who was very interested in seeing to it that our military and our veterans, and particularly the spouses of military who follow them around from state to state, are not disadvantaged by having to seek lower employment because they have barriers to their being able to get a license in the state that they're moving to. And this becomes an uncession bill because it does remove those barriers to employment for the military veterans and spouses of the military. Many occupations require a state license, and often with state-specific conditions and processes which can cause lengthy reemployment delays for military spouses. This bill aims to remove those barriers to licensure for military service members, their spouses, and the veterans who have separated from the military in the past 2 years. A recent study that was published by the Syracuse University this month found that 90% of female spouses of active duty service members reported being underemployed, meaning that they have more formal education or experience than their current position requires. In addition, the 2012 American Community Survey that's annually conducted by our Census Bureau showed that military spouses make an average of 38% less total personal income, and they are 30% more likely to be unemployed than their civilian counterparts. Approximately 35% of military spouses are in a profession that requires an occupational license, and most of those are nurses and teachers, but they also represent other areas. So in 2012 and 2013, as part of their Joining Forces initiative, First Lady Michelle Obama and Dr. Jill Biden addressed the National Governors Association, and they asked that all the governors take action to streamline state licensing for service members, their spouses, and veterans. Minnesota is one of only 5 states that has not taken action on this issue, so I think it's time for us to come to the table. Currently, Minnesota does not have an active federal military presence in our state. But only last year, approximately 60 active duty U.S. Air Force pilots were going to be transferred to Duluth with the 148th Fighter Wing for a 3-year training period. And due to last year's sequestration cuts, the establishment of this active association in Duluth was delayed. But eventually, Duluth will be a permanent home for these Air Force pilots and their families. When this active association arrives in Duluth, the spouses of these servicemen can take advantage of temporary licenses to quickly gain employment while they take the necessary steps to earn a Minnesota license. Over the next few years, the Department of Defense estimates that over 1 million service members are expected to leave the armed forces and to transition into civilian employment. Since many of these service members will relocate to Minnesota, This bill will help ease this transition for new veterans who are licensed in another state and they are looking for a job here in Minnesota. So basically what this bill does is it makes it easier for service members, their spouses, and the veterans to obtain civilian licensure. And this is a win-win for Minnesota's military families, our employers, and our economy. These are highly qualified individuals who deserve to be able to find work in a timely manner when they have to relocate to another state. Many licensing entities in Minnesota already allow for these temporary licenses. So for them, this bill just codifies their current practices. We have submitted this request to all of our licensing agencies and to our licensing boards and to all of our agencies. And for the most part, people are on board with us. I know that the Post Board has a concern about how it affects them, and they may address you or not address you. But otherwise, we have not heard anything negative. There have been some boards who made some suggestions about how we could modify our bill so that it would meet their requirements better, and we have done that. So I thank you for your attention, and I stand for any questions that you might have.
Thank you. Representative Benson has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great bill, and I thank you for bringing it. I think the last time we took testimony in the last session, if I'm not mistaken, I think the unemployment rate for veterans returning are about twice the rate of the regular population. So I think it's important that we continue to address that issue. But I'm also wondering, in this unsession, could not the same thing be accomplished for the general population at large? I mean, with a few modifications and amendments at some point, if we're talking about expediting, we have a number of professions and with some shortages. And so I'm wondering if at the general population at large, how difficult would it be to say, you know, we need to have a process that allows for people who are qualified to be able to move into these professions. And could it not be modified, since we're going to make exceptions for the military? I applaud you for what you're trying to do here, but couldn't the general population also benefit from the same kind of process?
Lieutenant Governor, sir.
Mr. Chair and Representative Benton, I certainly applaud your concern about that, and I agree with you. What we wouldn't want to do is put our own Minnesota members or our residents at a disadvantage for people that are coming into our state, while at the same time wanting to be able to provide a service to our military who are making transitions from other states into our state or are coming back from a deployment or following a spouse to this state and have to leave the employment that they may have at that time, and then suffer that disadvantage of not having ready employment because they don't have a license. So it's a streamlining process for the veterans at this time, but at the same time, I wouldn't want to give everybody out of state an advantage over our own Minnesota residents.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Benson.
Thank you. Just to follow up. Well, thank you. I think that the answer to my question is probably yes. So the consideration would be to how what we'd want to extend that to. And I think that it would behoove us potentially in the future to give an opportunity to some of our trade groups or people who benefit from licensures and the like to come back and provide some testimony potentially to say, you know, we have this shortage and there is a need, and whether they be out of state, you know, or not, or maybe limited regionally or whatever, that there could be a good reason to do this. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Benson, I think our citizens would support the bill as it's written, or with the idea as it's written. But one of the things that's in here is that the boards have to establish the process in which people will apply and get a temporary license and so forth. When that is done for the military, then they will have the conversations for possibilities of others, perhaps. Or they will have experiences as a result of their process, developing the process. And I think with the veterans and the military already in there, they can have an experience of finding out how does it work. And then if the legislature wants to visit the issue again as they're reviewing the experience with our military and the spouses, we can use that experience to refine the process that's established by each individual board.
Thank you. And I, you know, if I could just add, I think, you know, you're going through nine committees on this. I think of how many committees
seven.
We'd have, seven, how many committees we'd have to go to and the length of the presentation if you try to include everyone. So it's probably better that we stick with the purview of this bill as it is.
Mr. Chair, but a follow-up, I think she probably gave me the answer to it, and that is that when they're writing these new regulations or guidelines for this, easily the way to overcome the issue of out-of-state people being included in this, moving to it just for that would be some level of residency requirement. So I would stress that just the need for, you know, the kinds of technical skills and knowledge that's needed to fulfill the jobs that are important to Minnesota, that it at least gives some consideration, or when you're the bill's going to be what it is. And but at least they begin the thought process around some kind of residency requirement that will allow an expedited process to work within this framework. Thank you.
Representative Deffner.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, Lieutenant Governor, welcome to our committee, as you've already been welcome. I think this is a good bill. And could you explain, does it only deal with active duty service people who have left service in the prior 2 years? I'm just reading the language here. Do you also take in consideration our Guard and Reserve soldiers who have maybe been deployed five times, many of them? What about those soldiers and their spouses that are going through some of the same things as the active duty component?
Lieutenant Governor,
Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, no, it is three different groups of people. It's the spouses of active duty members, it's the active duty members, and it's the veterans who have left the military within the last 2 years.
Okay, so it could then be Guard and Reserve who have retired or have left the service in the last 2 years. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair. Lieutenant Governor.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and Representative Detmer, it could be, or it could be active duty members who are still in the Guards who are seeking employment.
Okay.
And I think, Representative Detmer, that by and large, Minnesota Guard personnel, if they have a license, will have been licensed in Minnesota already. Mm-hmm. It would be pretty rare that they would be licensed in another state.
Well,
yes.
Excuse me, Mr. Governor, Chair. Please. It is possible that they've transferred from another association that are a different state. Mm. So it would. It's not just Guard members, but it could be somebody in the Army who's transferred from one state to another state too.
Mr. Chair, I know there's no fiscal note on it, but rulemaking usually costs money. Is there any agencies here that could, you know, speak to that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, we recognize there will be a fiscal note regarding rulemaking, and we have requested a fiscal note, but we don't have one at this time.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Good.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I renew my motion that House File 2365 be re-referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Thank you. And because of our memo, I don't know what we do now. Do we just say,
that's
okay,
it?
Let's refer it? Okay, good. There's no vote to be taken.
Well,
we have to vote. Okay. All in favor of the re-referral, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The re-referral is re-referred.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members.
Thank you. So that
no.
Representative Murphy, you have another bill, House File 1948, if you'd like to introduce that.
Mr. Chair, this is not a new idea, and it was brought to my attention that it had been introduced in the past, and the need, because it hadn't gotten through all the parts of the legislature, that it is still a need for service people. Mr. Chair, I move House File 1948 be considered by the committee.
Thank you.
As I said, this bill was brought to me by a constituent who's at the Air Guard base in Duluth, and it's a basic equity issue of having state workers working side by side with federal workers, but the federal workers get a different treatment from the state workers. Mr. Kerr is here to help me with this bill. In the past, Representative Corey Kath carried the bill. But current Minnesota law provides an income tax subtraction for income earned by members of the Minnesota National Guard or other reserve components of the United States military for active service performed in Minnesota. That law explicitly excludes from this benefit those National Guard and Reserve members serving in the active guard and reserve. This bill would strike that exclusion, thereby extending the benefit to the active guard and reserve. The bill also extends the same treatment to those serving as state military employees. This is an issue that Mr. Kerr brought to my attention. And as I understand it, there are fewer than 20 of these personnel. So for consistency's sake, we include them as well.
Good.
The benefit would apply for income earned in taxable years beginning after December 31st, 2013. And it is my intent to refer the bill to the Tax Committee because they're the ones that have to make the final decision on the bill, on the committee, as a committee. But it's something that I wanted to bring to your attention because we care. And we're for fairness and we're for equity. And we think if people are working side by side, they should be pretty much treated alike.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Kahn.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Representative Murphy, is there any reason why this was in this form? What was the reason for the exclusion in the first place? Or what was the reason for the non-inclusion if it was inadvertent?
Mr. Kerr, if you'd identify yourself first and then respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Don Kerr. I'm the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. Mr. Chair, Representative Kahn, when the legislation was passed, there was some concern about service members who had chosen to serve full-time in the National Guard receiving the tax break. There was a perception on behalf of some of the authors that since they had chosen that path, perhaps they should pay taxes. The agency supported that outlook at the time. As so often happens, the unintended consequence of that created a separate class of folks because we also have folks serving on Title 10 in the Active Guard and Reserve program for the Army Reserve whose pay is non-taxable because of the way the law was written. And we basically isolated the group that was not taxed to a very specific group of folks, those serving in the National Guard in the Active Guard and Reserve program. And the particular inequity that we identified has to do with, we put a lot of folks on temporary active duty on orders for the last decade. And what we found was those people were not taxed. So we have created a situation where we actually had people doing the same or very similar function as Representative Murphy described, where one side of the table they were being taxed, the other side of the table they weren't. It created a lot of confusion with the Department of Revenue in whether people were eligible to claim the tax exemption or not, and required a lot of interaction. But back to your question, Representative Kahn, I think that was the original intent, was there was some concern on the part of the original authors that perhaps if they had chosen that path, they should pay taxes.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kerr, how many individuals would this apply to?
This would apply to just under 1,000, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch, just under 1,000 members in the Active Guard and Reserve program in the Army and the Air, and 16 military, state military employees.
And, Mr. Chair, Mr.
Representative Kerr, Lesch.
Is there precedent? Do we have other full-time jobs in the state that aren't military that we do this for? Are there any? I just can't think of. I'm trying to think of an example that would be comparable. But you know, fire, police, or something. Is there anyone else that we do this for, where we could get a baseline idea of what we're talking about for a fiscal note? I'm assuming when we get the revenue note rather, that'll come in, and has that been asked for?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lesch, I really don't know of any other groups that have been excluded in that fashion. I will tell you, we provided some information to Revenue, and I know they're working a fiscal note. And I guess I'll defer to them to do the calculation.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Kerr, the way I see this only deals with the AGR, correct, Active Guard and Reserve.
Mr. Chair, Representative Deborah, AGR and the 16 state military employees that we have, okay, that are very similar to AGR, but they're at a state status.
Representative Deborah.
And Mr. Chair and Mr. Kerr, currently, if you're in the Guard and Reserve, a regular National Guard or Army Reserve soldier, you don't receive this benefit. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Deborah, no, that's not correct. Your military pay in the state of Minnesota is non-taxable.
I'm talking... If I'm looking at it, it's 20 years of military service.
No, sir. It's any member of the National Guard, Army Reserve, active duty.
That's
military,
right. Yeah.
Pay is,
I agree.
Is not,
I agree there. I agree there.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Deborah.
I think we're looking at another bill then that's coming up.
Doesn't surprise me.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other questions?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we have about 1,000 people that will be included in this new bill, and we don't have a fiscal note yet, so we're not sure. So what is the committee's response to not understanding what the fiscal note is going to be before we would pass this on? Where does it have to go from here?
Representative Benson, I believe it goes as taxes.
And
you have a fiscal note there.
The fiscal note would be there.
Yes. Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
It was assigned because of the Veterans Affairs, part of the state government and Veterans Affairs. Mm-hmm. It was assigned to this committee. But the finance committees, it's my understanding that the finance committees are not going to open their budgets this year. And so it's going to taxes where it belongs because they raise the revenue. And so I have not been told this in any way, but I assume then that there will be a target, possibly, for bills that merit appropriations. But, as I said, it would be the tax committee that deals with the revenue as a whole. And so they will make the decision, the final decision. But because it was assigned to this committee, we have to refer it to them to get the idea there.
Thank you. Any further questions?
Well, I just thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Murphy, Chairman Murphy. I was just loving to get a door open so I could talk to the revenue guy sitting over there about him furloughing employees at the agency. But I'll wait for another day. And great testimony. I appreciate the bill, and we'll go from there.
Representative Murphy?
Mr. Chair, I ask for your support, and I renew my motion that House File 1948 be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Representative Murphy has moved that the bill House File 1948 be referred to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is passed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Change seats.
Representative Newton, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I would like to move House File 1947 for consideration to get the bill before us.
Please proceed.
No, please be considered.
Madam Chair, House File 1947 calls for a subtraction from federal income tax for military veterans who have retired from active military duty with 20 or more years of active military service, and also includes those veterans who have been wounded in action and have received retirement pay as a result of their wounds. Minnesota is one of only four states that really doesn't give full exclusion for military pay for veterans. Other states have varying degrees. Minnesota has a provision where veterans who have served can get up to can get an exception if they make less than 30 or. Yeah, less than $37,000. At a recent MAG meeting, Jerry Kaiser, who chairs the meeting, made a comment that, and I'll ask Representative Detmer to help me with this, but he was saying that there were fewer than five, I believe, active duty military personnel that they know of that retired in Minnesota last year. So we're talking about a relatively small number. And one of the reasons that people are not choosing to retire in Minnesota is the tax issue, where other states offer a very generous tax break for retirees. But we also don't have military commissaries, we don't have PX, and we don't have military hospitals that they can use. And so what this bill would do is to help encourage retirees to come to Minnesota. We've got great hunting and fishing. We've got a lot of other things that the state offers, but they don't come here because of the cost of not being able to exclude military pay from their taxes. So with that, I don't have anyone to testify. I anticipate there'll be questions. And I also want to mention, I know Representative Detmer has brought this up before, about excluding the pay for all veterans, whether they're active duty, guard, reserve. And I think the difference would be that we're dealing here with a small group of veterans as opposed to our National Guard and Reserve folks.
Represent Detmer.
Yeah, thank you. And we've heard some really excellent bills. I know we've been trying this for years to help our retired veterans come back to Minnesota. You know, as probably people know, that I've carried the bill to eliminate taxing of our veterans' retirement pay altogether. I think we're only of like six states that still tax our veterans' pensions. But I think we have 377,000 veterans that live in Minnesota, and only 4.7% of those have 20 years of service. So we only have about 18,000 veterans that live in Minnesota that have 20 years or more that are retired here. My point is, I think we should be looking at not just those that have retired from active duty, but we have many, you know, we have Guard and Reserves that are serving 20 years or more that live in Minnesota, and we'd like to see them stay in Minnesota and retire here. And the bill that I have coming forward, House File 2233, would include all veterans that decide to retire here in Minnesota with 20 years or more, that we would give them, in your case, it's $1,000 per year. I think mine is $1,500 per year. But that's something we can work out. But I would like to make sure that we include our Guard and Reserve, that our members of our Guard and Reserve here in Minnesota. And again, only 4.7% of our veterans that live in Minnesota are 20 years or more. So,
Madam Chair.
Representative Newton.
I think the difference that I see, Representative Detmer, is a lot of service members who have served 20 years or more almost have to be enticed to come back to Minnesota if they're originally from Minnesota, or they might be from other state that want to come to Minnesota. With our Guard and Reserve forces, they tend to live in Minnesota up until the time they retire. And so it's, you know, we're not bringing in new people. And as I've heard you mention and others in the past, individuals now who stay for 20 years in the service tend to be well-educated. Most of them have college degrees. They are young, like Representative Leidiger. You know, they're only 39 years old. But they come back and offer a lot to the state. And I think, you know, this is the first step. Let's open the door. Let's take care of the group of 20-year retirees first, and then see how this works, and then proceed from there.
Madam Chair, just a follow-up, Representative Newton. Many of our Guard and Reserve have served many years on active duty. Then they come into the Guard and Reserve. Then after being part of the Guard and Reserve, they might be deployed three or four times with the Guard and Reserve. So basically, they have many years of active duty service, but this bill would not include those men and women that are currently part of the Guard and Reserve that complete their 20 years of service. Am I correct,
Madam Chair? Yes, that is correct, Representative Depper.
Yeah.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Newton, I guess I've got a question is on line 4.25, where it says active military service has the meaning of section 209.0677. I've studied a lot of this stuff, but I can't off the top of my head tell you what the definition of that active military service is. Can you help me understand who that encompasses?
I might have to ask Mr. Kerr to come down here again, but I believe it's anyone who's had 6 months or more of continuous active service, exclusive of training. Is that correct? Put you on the spot.
Mr. Kerr.
Madam Chair, for the record, Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. I believe that's not quite correct. Active military service, as defined in that part of statute, I was just trying to pull it, but I didn't get there, really talks about service in either a federal or a state status under certain conditions that would cover most of the Guard and Reserve and active service, well, service on active duty and in state active service by statute. And that's something that I can pull up pretty quickly, I think, and try to report back if we'd like that.
Representative Lesh.
Madam Chair, under 290.0677, subdivision 2 definitions, active military service means active duty service in any of the United States Armed Forces, the National Guard, or Reserve. So it comes down to how they're defined on that. But it would fall under federal law, stated correctly, I think, by Mr. Kerr.
Oh, Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I realize this is not the tax committee, but I do have a question on 4.19 that we might want to just look at going forward. It says to exclude, to the extent included in federal tax income, wouldn't that really be wanting to exclude it from Minnesota? So I'm just wondering if we have the right jurisdiction, since Minnesota doesn't have jurisdiction on federal tax code, that it would be our Minnesota tax code that we'd probably be referencing. Again, not on taxes, it just jumped out at me. And it also jumped out in the comments that Representative Newton made when he introduced the bill, saying with federal income tax. And that might be the way that it needs to be done, but it just jumps out at me. We're talking state tax, and this is citing federal taxable income, so.
Mr. Bickerstaff.
Madam Chair, Representative O'Driscoll, the reason that it reads to the extent included in federal income is because this section of law defines what is Minnesota income for Minnesota tax purposes. Minnesota income begins with your federal AGI. So this is saying that to the extent included in that AGI, we're now removing it from your AGI for purposes of Minnesota taxation.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, I'm not questioning the purpose and the motive on it, because I do support it. I'm just not seeing where it says would be subtracted from in there. Because I would agree with you that the AGI, the adjusted gross income that you would have, is transferred from line 35, whatever it is in your federal return, over to line 1 or 4, whatever it is in your M1 form. I don't see where it says as deducted from. Because all those references are to federal.
Mr. Bickerstaff.
Madam Chair and Representative O'Driscoll, the reason that it cites the federal taxable income is because that's the starting point for your Minnesota income. So the numbers that you take from your 1040 or your 1040A begin with your federal taxable income, and that's your Minnesota income. So we're subtracting as to the extent that it was included in your federal income. So if you made $10,000 in military pay that was taxed at the federal level, you would subtract that $10,000 from your taxable income to reach your Minnesota income for Minnesota tax purposes.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And it was just pointed out to me that this is actually in statute right now, 290.01 subdivision 19B, that does state that, and this isn't part of the bill. I was just looking at the new added language, and that's where I got the federal income from, so it does tie back. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Newton, I have a question that I might have missed because I was chatting with some other folks about the details of the bill. But I remember Representative Severson and this ongoing for, I don't know how many, going on a decade now maybe. But the revenue note, and I would be remiss not to correct folks because Chair Lincheski would insist that I correct folks and call it a revenue note on anything that raises money. The revenue note changed over time, that I'm sure Representative Detmer probably remembers, because he was trying to, Representative Searson was trying to find some way to fit it within the targets that would be acceptable, and it was really large, encompassed everyone, as you're talking about. I mean, obviously that's a huge price tag. So folks, if you want to spend money, you got to raise money, which is why it's going to the tax committee. So so if I miss this, please pardon me, but Representative Newton, what is the revenue note on this? I'm assuming we have one because of all the incarnations that I've had on the past. Okay.
Representative Newton.
And okay. Well, I understand, Madam Chair, that it will be ready for coming to taxes. But then my second question is, and if that's the answer, I'd have
yes.
From Representative Newton. Representative Detmer, do you have any idea the size of the revenue note for your proposal to include everyone?
The bills in the past or the new bill coming up?
Madam Chair, both Representative Detmer, because I know Representative Severson originally wanted to include everyone, and it was really big, so then he he had different versions that pared it down.
Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer.
Yeah, we had a bill last segment. It was a phase-in process over 5 years. I think the first year was $2 million. The second year was, I think, $6 million and so forth. So it was phased in over a period of 5 years. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but I think the first year was $2 million. Thank you. But that's a separate, that was for total military retirement pay. This bill includes, if you're making, say, six, if you're in Minnesota here and you're making, say, $60,000, you've got 20 years in, you're going to take $1,000 off from each year. That's that means you only be taxed on, you deduct $30,000, you're only going to be taxed on $60,000 or $30,000. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, yes.
Representative Newton.
That is correct. If your income, including the military retirement, is $40,000, you'd be able to deduct $1,000 a year. So you, for a 20-year retiree, your income would be shown as $20,000 then.
Madam Chair.
Representative Emmer.
And the bill that you're speaking about is, it was just dealt with just military retirement pay. Or this bill deals with what your whole pay that you're that you have, and just as I mentioned before, that 1947 would not include any Guard or Reserve soldiers. Say you spent 15 years on active duty, came back and wanted to finish out your career on the Guard or the Reserve, you would not qualify under this bill. You would not. No, you got to have 20 years in.
Mm-hmm. Representative Newton.
You wouldn't.
Good. Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I renew my motion that House File 1947 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I guess, was I supposed to say that? Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Drazkowski. Welcome to our committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, would you like to start off by having a member move the bill, or should I describe it first, or what's your pleasure?
I would like you to move the bill for our consideration.
Madam Chair, I'll move the bill, House File 1915, for consideration by the government, State Government Finance and Veterans Affairs Committee.
Representative Drazkowski, I understand that you have an amendment. H1915A1.
I do, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, the I understand the drafting on the amendment was incomplete. There were two other lines that needed to be amended. Okay, thank you. So the amendment to bring the amendment to where it would need to be, we would need to add two lines onto the amendment that would read exactly the same as line 1.2, with the exception it would say line 13, and then that would be the second one, and then the third one would say line 17. So it would have the same language on lines 13 and line 17.
So what you're doing is, you're taking out the words active service and you're inserting the words cumulative service.
Correct, Madam Chair.
In each space.
And if we could do that on lines 11, 13, and 17, that would be the proper amendment.
All right. Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
I'll move the A1 amendment as it was described.
Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The bill is amended as House H 1915A1 passed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, thank you for having this bill before you. This is a bill that was brought to me by a constituent during the interim who works for state government in an area that utilizes, he's a veteran and it utilizes his military experience. And he said to me, he said, you know, if you could do something for veterans, it would be to remove this threshold for this reciprocity for veterans who have military police type experience in the military to move into the civilian police when they come here. That would be something you could do to decrease it from 5 years to 4 years. And his and people that he works with, their rationale was, you know, when you sign up for the military, you sign up for, I don't know if you can sign up for 2 years, in some branches I think you can, but usually 4 years. And then if you're going to meet the five-year threshold, it would require that you sign up for another tour of duty. So that was his suggestion, so I wrote it into a bill. Subsequently, members met with the MEG committee, and they told me about a coincidental effort that they were aware of with the Minnesota Governors, National Governors Association. And Madam Chair, Mr. Melton is here from the Post Board today, who also is a veteran, to describe where they're at with it and share with you the work that they have done, if that's okay, Madam Chair.
You know, you brought exactly the right person with you. I just love when Mr. Melton comes before my committee, and it's been several years, a long time, since we worked together on a committee. So welcome, Mr. Melton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Neil Melton. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Board of Peace Officer Standards and Training. And I do want to thank Representative Drazkowski for introducing this legislation. And it is a bit coincidental, because the basis for this proposed change stems from a meeting last fall in Washington, D.C. Minnesota was one of six states that were awarded grants by the National Governors Association to create more efficient pathways for veterans seeking jobs in certain occupations. The goal of the conference was, and allow me to quote, to ensure that current and former military members in Minnesota have the most efficient and effective pathways to employment by increasing opportunities for licensure and certification. In Minnesota, three occupations were identified for that: nursing, EMT paramedics, and law enforcement. At the conference, the teams from the six states were joined by representatives from a number of federal agencies, including all the branches of the military, Department of Labor, Defense, Veterans Affairs, National Guard, Education, and others. Each state made a presentation of their current policies and procedures that serve veterans. Overall, Minnesota was complimented on current practices as they relate to the reintegration of military members into education and jobs. In the end, it was the National Governors Association recommendation that that Minnesota revise Statute 626-8517 to bring it in line with military enlistments. As Representative Drazkowski said, the four-year enlistment as opposed to having them re-up for five. In general, the change reduces the service or combined service and education requirement from 5 to 4 years, and it parallels interstate reciprocity for law enforcement as police officers transition from states. And it changes the phrase active service experience to cumulative service experience in order to qualify those members of the National Guard and the Reserve. Now, this language encompasses three scenarios: people with military experience only, people with military experience and a college degree, and those that have military experience and civilian law enforcement experience in another state. Specifically, the revised language would be that on line 1.11, as described, 4 years cumulative service experience in law enforcement, military law enforcement occupation specialty. Lines 1.13, you get 2 years of cumulative service in a military enforcement occupation specialty and completion of a 2 or more year degree. Lines 1.16, 4 years cumulative experience as a full-time peace officer in another state combined with the cumulative service experience. And lastly, on January 23rd, the Post Board met and voted unanimously to support this change.
Lesh.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Melton. 2008, I brought you this bill. It didn't have lines 1.13 to 1.15, but other than that, it was the same bill. And you were very resistant to it at the time. And I'm wondering what has changed since then. I understand the National Governors Association met and has said, you know, you should do some of this stuff. But is there anything else that has happened in the last 6 years that has made your board think now that this is a good idea, other than the recommendation of that national group?
Mr. Melton.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh, I apologize. I don't recall our specific conversations back then. I know we were going through a rule change at that time about interstate reciprocity to bring that in line. I believe, I'm just guessing, that was part of that discussion, and it was certainly nothing personal.
Just business, I understand. Thank you. I didn't know if there was some migration of ideology on the board based on that. Folks are resistant, right? It's a licensing outfit, so folks want to be protective of access to the license in all ways, but that was the impetus of my question. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Dettmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a great bill. I know it was brought forward to the MAG meeting, and by the way, anybody is invited to attend the MAG Military Action Group meetings and just contact my legislative assistant and get on the mailing list, but we have one coming up next week. And this was brought forward. Thank you, Representative, for bringing it forward. I do have one question. Is a two-year degree, is that any two-year degree, or does it have to be a two-year degree in law enforcement, or what are we talking about, a two-year degree, Madam Chair?
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would yield to research if they can help me out with this, Mr. Biggerstaff.
Mr. Biggerstaff.
Madam Chair and members, the way that the bill is currently written, it would be any two-year degree. Any two or more year degree.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Drazkowski, as was mentioned here, we have nurses and EMTs. That is another bill going to be forthcoming to include them in. I know that the Post Board doesn't have sway over their licensing, but are we looking at doing the same thing for nurses and EMTs that are other licensed crafts or licensed professions that would have the same possible implications?
Representative Drazkowski.
Madam Chair, I understand. I would certainly support the spirit of that, Representative Nelson, but Mr. Melton tells me that he can answer it better than I.
Mr. Melton.
Madam Chair, members, I've been at a number of the core team meetings, the group that went to Washington, so I'm aware that the nursing board and the EMT paramedics are holding meetings as we speak to design a pilot curriculum that would be done within the colleges and hospitals that do the training with the same intent. So they're a little bit behind where law enforcement is because we got a jump on this back in 2008. But they are working to the same goal.
Representative Dettmer.
Yeah, Madam Chair, yeah, this very topic has been discussed in pretty well in the MAG meeting, and I know Deed and Menskew, they were there talking about what they're doing, and there is a board, there's people that are discussing for the EMT people and the nursing careers. So yeah, it's being discussed. It is.
And then when it's discussed, then it comes before the legislature.
Right.
And sometimes we discuss. And sometimes we pass. And sometimes it takes longer. And discussion is good, right? Yeah. We all learn. Representative Jaskowski, anything else?
No, I think the discussion has been good. But there, fortunately, the, one of my college professors used to say, we're going to cuss and discuss this. And so I didn't hear any cussing, so that's good. But I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing the bill.
You bet. Representative Nelson.
I'll renew my motion that House File 1915, as amended, be re-referred to the Committee on Public Safety, Finance, and Policy.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Go on your way, Representative Jaskowski, to the new committee, Public Safety.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Newton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 1916 for consideration to get the bill before us.
All right.
Madam Chair, House File 1916 deals with the special license plates for women veterans. As you know, Minnesota law establishes license plates for individuals who served in military service. We have plates for everything. I think we just eliminated the World War I vets, but Korean War vets, World War II vets, Vietnam vets, veterans who have received the Purple Heart, veterans who have received various medals. And it is long overdue that we recognize our female veterans. We have approximately 370,000 veterans in Minnesota, of whom 29,000 are women veterans. That's roughly 8% of the veterans in the state. And more and more, we have women in the service, so that we have roughly 15% of our active duty force is now female. And it is past time that we recognize women veterans. These are not plates just to say, look at me. These are plates that recognize the service of people who have served. Today I have Jill Trout. Let me get it right now. Jill Troutner, who is a West Point graduate, a woman veteran who has served in Bosnia, and I would like to have her present some testimony.
Okay, Ms. Troutner.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is Jill Troutner. I am an Army veteran. I grew up on White Earth Indian Reservation in northern Minnesota. My parents came there to teach, and they never left. When I was 17, I was nominated by the late Congressman Arlen Stanglin to the United States Military Academy, and I graduated from the class of 1993. Following West Point, I served on active duty in the United States Army with the 1st Armored Division and a forward support battalion in Germany. Being an exceptionally fit soldier, I then had the privilege of competing in biathlon with the Vermont Army National Guard and the United States biathlon team. Following that, I made my way home to the Minnesota Army National Guard, where I served as a company commander with people that I truly loved. I also deployed with the 34th Infantry Division for peacekeeping operations in Bosnia in 2003. Looking at myself and my fellow veterans, my fellow women veterans, you wouldn't know we had served, as there is nothing to visibly distinguish us from our fellow citizens. I was shocked when I found out how many Minnesota women are veterans, more than 29,000, according to the Department of Employment and Economic Development. I had no idea so many women veterans were so invisible. For these women, having a woman veteran's license plate is a long overdue acknowledgement of the service they have given, and it is something visual that cannot be mistaken as recognition of anyone's service but their own. Everyone notices a veteran's plate. Everyone assumes that it belongs to a man. For me, this license plate is a statement of value, that Minnesota, my state, values my contribution, my sacrifices, and my patriotism in a highly visible way. That is a way that will eliminate the need for me to explain to others that I am a military veteran. Supporting HF 1916 is the right thing to do. We need to recognize the women who have served honorably in the military and let them know that they too are valued. There's no profit motive associated with this license plate, and there's no political agenda. This is simply a group of military veterans and citizens, your constituents, who want to be recognized and feel like their service matters. We want your support on this. Madam Chair, Representatives, thank you.
Ms. Troutner, thank you for sharing your story with us. And I especially like that you said there are 29,000 invisible women veterans, because so often that happens. We appreciate your service. Thank you for sharing with us. Representative Devereaux.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, thank you. This is another piece of legislation that's come through the MAG meeting, and it kind of got stalled last year in committee, I think it was. But thank you, Representative Newton, for bringing it forward again, and hopefully we can get things through. I know sometimes MnDOT, that puts the license plates together, figured out what it cost. They have to sell so many and so forth, so that's something that's got to be worked out. But again, relate to West Point. My wife and I have twin sons that are West Point graduates, class of 2000. So thank you for your service.
Madam Chair, if I may, Ms. McCormick from MnDOT has indicated that for purposes of just making this work, that it would be better if we change the effective date to 1 January 2015. So I ask if I can do that as an author's amendment, or if I should wait until this goes to the next committee and have a formal amendment. I would prefer to do it now if I can do it, offer it as an author's amendment.
Representative Newton.
Madam Chair, I would like to amend the effective date of this legislation from July 1, 2014 to 1 January 2015.
To when?
January 1, 2015.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. The bill is amended. I'm sorry. Representative Kahn.
Well, Madam Chairman, as I look at all these categories, and I look at the word must, which appears before each one of them, it seems that someone might fit into many more than one of these categories. Like you could be a Korean Defense Bronze Star vet, woman's vet, which, what would the inscription on the plate say?
Representative Newton.
There is no restriction. This would be a matter of choice. And of course, we have a lot of veterans who would fall into any one of these categories that elect not to have special license plates. But it's up to the veteran as to which plate they wish to ask for. Madam Chair, if there are no further questions, I would like to renew my motion that House File 1916 be referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance.
As amended. As amended.
As amended. Yes, thank you.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House File 1916 will be referred to the Committee on Transportation Finance.
That's correct.
House File 1916, as amended, will be referred. In the previous, thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And in the previous bill, House File 1915, as amended, will be re-referred. But I didn't make a note of it. So I just want to make sure I say it. Okay. Is there any other business to come before the committee? If not, this meeting is adjourned.